This is a lecture given at St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas. Visit our website, stdave.org.
All right, folks, well, welcome. So today we have a holy conversation, and just to remind you, what we try to do is pretty much once a month, we try to schedule a holy conversation on a topic or a current event to really explore or to hear how our Episcopal faith intersects or helps us engage on a particular topic. And so today we have Pastor Angela, who's going to be talking to us about climate change and the baptismal covenant, which I think is a pretty cool intersection. So I'm excited to hear what she has to say. So she will tell you a little bit more about her interest in this topic, a whole lot more about her interest in this topic, but I was just chatting with her. She has an undergrad degree in environmental studies and a master's in city planning. And so this topic is near and dear to her heart. She's weaving it into her doctor of ministry work right now at Austin Presbyterian Seminary. So just to kind of contextualize this holy conversation for you. So we'll be talking about climate change, the environment today. Next Sunday, we will not have a CRALC lecture, and instead you're invited to participate in the Creation Care Fair. So this is kind of queuing up your participation in the Creation Care Fair, which is hosted by our Environmental Guild, which is next Sunday, 10 a.m. I think it'll be out on the surface lot in the Labyrinth area. There'll be people here, organizations around the city of Austin with information about how you can participate and make a difference in terms of the care of creation. And then the week following that, of course, is the Feast of St. Francis on October the 4th, which is on a Wednesday. And you heard a little bit about that during the announcements if you came to 9 o'clock. But we'll be having a pet blessing and a special service for the feast day of St. Francis, who is a patron saint of the creation, on October 4th. So lots of ways to think about and be involved in creation care over the next couple of weeks. So Pastor Angela.
Thank you. Mona took a little bit of my steam, one of my slides where I talk about my background. So we'll just skip over that one. But let's get started. But I always like to start with prayer. This is one of my favorite prayers from the Iona Abbey Book of Worship. And if you don't know about Iona, it's a spiritual pilgrimage site. And their prayer book really sort of intersects Anglican worship with nature and social justice issues. So I thought that tied in really nicely with our topic for today. So. With nature and its power and beauty, with rain and wind and sunshine, with the ancient rocks and the budding flower, we gather in praise of God. With believers and seekers the whole world wide, with people of every land and speakers of every language, we gather in praise of God. With angels and saints in heaven, with Saint David and those who built this place, and with all who have worshiped here, we gather in praise of God. With Jesus, who promised his presence, and the Spirit who showers her blessings, we gather in praise of God. Here let heaven and earth embrace. Here may God's people find home. Amen. Amen. All right. So glad you're all here. So who am I and why this topic? Oh, just another little aside. Except for that first picture, most of the pictures in this presentation are from either hikes or pilgrimages or just things I've done out in the world. And this is my daughter. I think this is Hawaii. So, you may or may not know, I'm the associate rector here. I am first and foremost your priest. And I'm trained to be a priest, obviously. That was my second master's. But my first undergrad degree, as Mona mentioned, I got a degree in environmental studies from Florida International University. And then I got a master's from University of Memphis in city and regional planning. So in a lot of ways, this conversation intersects my passions. It's, you know, environmental studies, the world and nature, and of course, the love of God and caring for God's creation and God's people. So if you know me, you know a few things about me. You know that I adore being outdoors. I love gardening and hiking. And the older I get, the more I love those things. You would know that I started an initiative here called Holy Hikes. If you don't know what that is, it basically takes hiking and combines liturgy in the outdoor world. So we hold those monthly, every third Saturday of the month. This coming month in October, we're actually combining that with the Heart Walk, the Heart and Stroke Walk. Figured we can do it, and we can also do it for a good cause. So if you want to join that, you can go ahead and do that online as well. I've been recycling and thinking sustainably before it was cool. mostly because of my undergrad degree. Many of my teachers were recycling and thinking about biofuels, and this was back in the 80s. My love, my passion is the intersection of our love for God, Jesus Christ, the church, with our duty to be good stewards of the entire world around us. My own life, believe it or not, has strongly influenced my own daughter, Victoria, who's decided to study environmental policy and planning. She just graduated from UC Davis, and she's also thinking about going into sustainable city development. So go figure. So you know, what we do, the choices we make, can also influence others. So I just put that as an aside as we go on. I love science. I grew up all around it. Both my parents went to medical school. There were medical journals at home. I love to look at it all the time. And I remember I was probably 8 or 9 or 10 when I pulled out one of those journals and I learned about the reproductive system. So I knew stuff before any of my friends knew about what goes on with the body. And then I love God and I love what I do. I truly found my vocation when I came here and decided to Austin to go to seminary back almost 15 years ago. Besides science, I use scripture, our tradition, theology, and other resources as a lens by which I address many of the social issues that we encounter here, of which one of them is climate change. Okay. So why this topic and why a holy conversation about it? Well, quite simply, everything I just mentioned, right? My passion, my love, my background. The other reason I think we need to talk about it is because it's divisive, because it is so politically, and I say politically polarized in this country, and probably one of the only countries where it's so politically separated. And I think it's important to separate what's true, what is the science behind it, what is the false information that we're hearing, and just reality check. Well, at least for me too, even though I have a background in this, people much smarter than me and better trained have been studying this issue for a very long time, decades. How long, you may ask yourself? Actually, they've been studying some of this stuff since the 1850s about what our impact is on the natural world. And my hope is that by having this conversation, especially here in a sacred place like St. David's, and St. David of Wales, who loved nature and pilgrimage and lived a very simple and aesthetic life, what better place to have a conversation like this about it in the context of being Christians, so that we can also have more conversations with others and hopefully have an impact on others and how this impacts all of us. Okay. So since I wanted to ground this in scripture, we all know that first verse from John chapter 1, verses 1 through 3. In the beginning was the Word was God, and through God, all things were made. Through God, all things were made. We were created in the image of God, first and foremost. All things come from God. So to love God is to love all things made through God. Okay, so that's the premise and the lens through which we want to move forward in this presentation. All right, then in chapter 1 of Genesis, verses 25 through 28, we have this verse. God spoke, "Let us make human beings in our image, make them reflecting our nature, so that they can be responsible for the fish in the sea, the birds in the air, the cattle, and yes, earth itself, and every animal that moves on the face of the earth." God created every human being. He created them godlike, little g, reflecting God's nature. Okay, so what does this tell us? This tells us that we were created not only in God's image, but we were also created with a purpose. And our purpose was to be responsible for every living thing, the earth and all that lives on it and in it. Okay? So this is how our scriptures begin. And if you look further later in Revelations, there's a little line that says, "For all those who destroy the earth, they will be destroyed." So it's like the beginning and end of the Bible has these things. Okay? So the other thing I want to sort of lay out for you is the greatest commandment, right? We know what the greatest commandment is. From John 13, verse 34 to 35. "Let me give you a new command, to love one another. In the same way I loved you, you love another. This is how everyone will recognize that you are my disciples, when they see the love you have for each other." Takeaways? The greatest commandment. And Jesus says, this is above all others, and all the other commandments flow from this one. So we should be asking ourselves, are we loving others if we turn away in apathy? Are we loving God if we're not caring for the least of these, including all of creation? Okay, so again, the lens by which we want to cover these things, okay? And then a little meditation from Meister Eckhart. If you know anything about Meister Eckhart, he was a German theologian, Catholic theologian, who lived during the 13th century. And he wrote this: "Apprehend God in all things, for God is in all things. Every single creature is full of God and is a book about God. Every creature's a word of God. If I spent enough time with the tiniest creature, even a caterpillar, I would never have to prepare a sermon. So full of God is every creature." Oh, just a couple of pictures of hiking and other stuff for your enjoyment. Little Instagram pictures. And then we continue here. Wanted to share with you some main data points that I've collected. These sort of came about from just different headlines and different things that I gathered and observations, okay? The CBC, if you don't know, that's the Canadian Broadcasting Company in Canada, reported that the salmon in the creek are actually cooking. It's so hot that they're, you know, they can't do what they do. It's affecting them. Scientists predict that 65% of insects on the earth are predicted to be extinct. That came from the news in India. ENE News reported that climate change is a threat to our biodiversity. And if anybody understands anything about biodiversity, you know how incredible, how important that is. Back in last year, they reported that 30 million people were displaced by the deadly floods that happened in Pakistan. 30 million people. That is a lot of people. They've reported in UNICEF back in June of last year, and I can say, as someone who's visited Malawi and the continent of Africa, that this is true, that child marriage on the rise in the Horn of Africa is increasing as drought intensifies. So you may ask yourself, why? How can that be possible? Honestly, because families are starving And in order to not starve, they're either selling off or giving away their daughters, young daughters, ages of 10, to marriage so that they can survive. Terrible, but that is the reality. Another piece of information is that economic gaps are increasing by 25%. Basically, what that means is that poor countries are getting poorer and the richer countries are getting richer. The majority of those who are most affected by climate change are those who are vulnerable, those whose countries have higher levels of poverty, where there's a lack of infrastructure, or whether it's a lack of safety for any reason. So this is also a social justice issue when you really think about it. Since the 1960s, climate fueled disasters have increased this economic gap. So it's important to note as well. And here is a quote by John Muir, if you know anything about John Muir. No wonder the hills and groves were God's first temples, and the more they are cut down and hewn into cathedrals and churches, the farther off and dimmer seems the Lord himself. So still highlighting our God in creation, our God who created all things and is in all things, including us. Okay, so what science and some of the experts are saying, okay? Obviously, there are those that we know, and that percentage is decreasing, believe it or not, those who completely flat out deny climate change. I think the latest information tells us it's only about 7%. And then there are other categories of people. So those who are cautious, those who, are doubters, but like they don't completely debunk it. And then those who are, actively sort of positioning for it and agree. And that acts actually the biggest piece of the bucket. So there are some arguments that people make to sort of say, well, it doesn't exist, right? Because the sun's energy goes through a cycle too, where it gets stronger and weaker over time. Well, scientists have been reporting that the sun has been diminishing in energy over the last 50 years. Okay. So theoretically, if that's true, then we should be getting cooler, right? Another interesting argument that people use is that natural weather cycles are causing this. And so it's important to note that weather cycles, actually what they do is move heat from one place to another place, or cooler weather from one place to another place. You know, we talk about cold fronts and they come down. That's the cycle. It's bringing a cold front, the cold air down, right? So it doesn't heat the actual planet. It just moves the air around from east to west, north to south, okay? That's important to know. Another popular one was that, volcanoes do it, right? Volcanoes heat up the earth. Actually, that's not true. That when volcanoes explode, they produce particles, they produce ash, right, that are released into the atmosphere. And what that actually does is create a blanket or an umbrella, right, that blocks the sun and then reflects that energy back into space. So again, it actually has more of a cooling effect. And so important, these are some of the key ones that I've heard. If you go on the internet, these are some of the ones you find. We know through science that this heating of the planet actually began back in the 1700s through the burning of coal and other fossil fuels that when they're burned end up producing heat. And then that ends up trapping gases in the atmosphere, wrapping a sort of what some scientists, particularly Catherine Hayhoe, if you never heard of her, she's actually a Canadian who lives in Texas and Plano, and she's a climatologist. And she's wrote a book, great book, and it's called Saving Us. It's a great book. So I invite you to order it. She lives now in Texas, in West Texas. But anyway, so she likened it to a blanket right? That a blanket has been created around the atmosphere, sort of keeping heat within the earth, okay? And so scientists have been aware of this pretty much since the 1850s, okay? I personally learned about it back in the mid 80s when I was in undergrad, when I was getting my degree in environmental studies, okay? So we've been talking about this. That's why I started recycling at a really young age and trying to reduce, reuse, recycle, which we know that term for a long time. All right, so here's the thing. Another thing that people mention is, well, 1 degree, 2 degrees, that doesn't seem like a lot. Like, really, is that a lot? Well, again, Catherine Hayhoe uses this great analogy that I love, okay? Imagine your temperature raised 1 or 2 degrees. You're running a fever, right? How do you feel? You feel bad, right? You're sweating, right? You're emitting more heat. Your vapor is leaving your body. You can get dehydrated. What else? You feel achy, right? You may have a headache. You can have chills too, right? Because as you're having that fever. So she likens it to the earth having a fever. The earth is sick, okay? So that's a perfect, when I heard that analogy, I was like, wow, she like nailed that, right? The earth has a fever and the earth is sick, okay? The heating of the earth ends up producing more vapor, okay? Water and gases in the air that are affecting all of our weather patterns, okay? So we can talk more about why that means it would snow more during winter and why those are more extreme. But basically what you're going to end up having is more extreme winters and more extreme summers, okay? Now, we can say extreme events have been happening forever, right? Think about, again, I like to sort of make examples here in Texas, right? Because we can relate to that. The Dust Bowl in the 1930s, that was an extreme event. Another one, I wasn't alive, but history books tell us that in Galveston and Hurricane, it was one of the most devastating hurricanes of all time in the year 1900. It was before they named them. So that's why it's called the Galveston Hurricane, okay? But here's the thing. Just turn on the news. How more often are these extreme events happening? Well, I'll tell you how more often. For example, in Houston, again, here in Texas, they've experienced three 500-year floods in only 3 years. Now, you do realize what a 500-year flood is, right? Right? It means it's only supposed to happen once in 500 years, and it's happened 3 times in 3 years. Y'all, this is like serious. We are seeing the number and intensity of storm, flood, droughts, and hurricanes. Tell me about this past summer here in Texas. I actually can personally speak to my own sort of experience of this. I grew up in Florida, in Miami, Florida, where hurricanes come through. We're always getting ready for hurricanes. But honestly, I can only really recall from my childhood, I remember, I think it was in grade school, this Hurricane David that was coming. And I remember getting ready for all the stuff, getting the house ready. And then at the last minute, David sort of skirted off from Florida. So I remember that as a young child. And the only next hurricane I really remember as a child was Hurricane Andrew that hit in the 1990s. And it went right over me, the eye. So I remember that devastation, but that only was like, I think a strong category 3. So keep in mind, right? And since then, the number of hurricanes, as we know and is being reported, are bigger, stronger, more intense, and more frequent, okay? So as you know, hurricanes get their energy from the ocean, okay? When the water is warmer, it's going to fuel more hurricanes. I'm sure you guys have heard this, okay? Floods. Warmer air holds more water vapor. More vapor means more water to come down on certain areas and flood. Droughts? How can droughts be worse, right? Well, the heat is causing more water to evaporate. And what happens is the water's not staying in that area because of those natural air cycles. And so the water is being taken somewhere else. And so drier areas are getting drier. Look at California, look at places in Africa, okay? And you'll see this, right? The hotter it gets, the more high pressure systems that direct storms move away. So stronger and longer droughts exist. In the 1950s, here's another interesting piece of information. In the 1950s, there was an average of one weather or climate-related disaster every 4 months. By the 2010s, we were having one, guess, every what? Huh? Every day? No, not quite that often. Every 3 weeks, from 4 months to every 3 weeks. So it's important to note these sort of facts that have, or data points that we have. Now, it's also important to note that climate change itself does not create these events. These things naturally occur. What climate change does makes these events more dangerous, more damaging, and more devastating. Okay? So here's at the heart of what I want to ask. If we are turning away, if we're not talking about this, if we're not, you know, surrounding our life and our values and our choices around the care of God, the care of each other, and the care of creation, are we loving God and neighbor? Are we fulfilling our purpose to care for and to protect God's creation and everything that's in it? It's a hard look at ourselves, okay? So what can we do about it, right? I presented all this stuff, and it's like, what can we do about it? And I'm a solution-oriented person. I do believe that there are answers to this, okay? The reality is these disasters affect all of us. The food that we eat, the animals that we grow and nurture so that we can also eat, the water we drink and the air we breathe. And another quote by Catherine Hayhoe that I loved is that this isn't about saving the planet, because the planet's going to be here even after we're all gone. The planet's going to still exist, okay? It's really about saving us. It's really about our future, okay? Our children and our children's children, okay? So what do we do about it? Again, through the lens of our faith. There are plenty of things that we can do to live more intentionally. I do believe that our faith comes in here. It should help us connect this reality, this issue that we're experiencing, okay, to our hearts, to connect what we know to why it matters and what we should be doing about it, okay? It's one of the things that we learn from Jesus. Our faith is it's not enough to just believe. You have to believe and act on it, right? And live your life that way. So another piece of information that's really interesting, that we waste 50% of the food we produce. Take note of that. Either because we don't eat it, we throw it away, because, you know, it doesn't look pretty enough, so the farmers throw away. 50%, half of what we produce is going to waste. We waste about 60% of the energy we produce because either our houses aren't insulated enough, because we're not being careful with what we do, we leave stuff plugged in, whatever it is. We waste 60%, 7% of the energy that we are using, okay? We can do better. And I wanted to show you an example. See, in Africa, where a lot of these things are impacting them, droughts, lack of water, waste, all these things, they're actually taking human waste, produce, whatever it is, and producing biogas to then produce energy, okay? We can retrofit our buildings, right? Maybe add some more insulation to ensure that we're keeping the energy where it needs to be. I live in a new community out east called Whisper Valley, and the developers of that community decided very intentionally to build a community that sort of met a certain level of insulation and then also using sort of clean energy. So all the houses are running off of a geothermal loop. So all the houses there, and they also have solar power. It's a new sort of idea that this developer to show that we can live more sustainably and smarter. And I will say, as someone who lives here, I wasn't affected by the storm, the ice storm, and I wasn't affected because of the heat. I never lost power. So, I mean, there are answers and it works, okay? We can invest more energy in clean energy. We all know these things, right? I just returned from Malawi last year, or this past year. And did you know that only 6% of the population in Malawi has access to any form of utilities, electricity, running water? That's 6%. That's nothing. It's probably why it's one of the poorest countries in the world. Okay. Over 700 million people globally lack electricity of any kind. My host family, Tawanda, he has a solar business and his business is booming in Malawi. And we had electricity at his house because he could generate it. He could store it in batteries. So this is a true sustainable solution for people in other countries who are living in extreme poverty. Okay. How do we help people out of poverty? We do it by providing things like, first and foremost, it's direct correlation to people's health to those who have electricity, okay? Is look at our neighbors. We saw an increase in just frustrations and just health issues this past summer because of the heat and the inability to have electricity and a cool place to sit in. So there's a direct correlation between people's health, okay, and well-being, with electricity, running water, education, and basic healthcare. Okay. But it starts with providing some infrastructure. Okay. And that's where some of these clean initiatives make sense in some of these countries. Okay. Things like wind and solar is definitely because people can sort of live independently without an infrastructure across the board. Our new clinic in Mindanti has solar. And that's how we were able to provide healthcare in Malawi. Okay. We're also focused on education, especially for girls. So, I mean, it's a little bit of a Malawi plug, but it's something I experience and it's real. All right. So it's really going beyond our bubble and really understanding this global issue. Okay. Clean energy like wind and solar is an answer. We can also help protect and restore nature, right? Restoring coastal wetlands, forests, peatlands, anything that grows green things, trees and plants, not your lawn. Your lawn is awful. It's a water sucker. So we'll talk more about that. But, planting in your own yard, and I'm doing this, I'm slowly taking out all this lawn and planting natives and or local grasses or other things that use less water, being intentional about that. We can practice, is anyone here has agricultural practices? We can practice smart farming practices, which put carbon back into the soil. We also should be building resilience and learning to adapt to the changing world, because it's going to be with us for quite some time. Put some work into greening some of our cities, right? My daughter gets really passionate about this. because to her, it's a social justice issue. Like, some of the hottest neighborhoods are our low-income neighborhoods. There are no trees. There's no green space. All right. What would it take for us to go and help build gardens and trees to shade and reduce the temperature in these neighborhoods that are sometimes 15 degrees, that's a lot, 15 degrees hotter in these neighborhoods than in sort of more affluent neighborhoods? So it's a social justice issue. And if you know anything about our baptismal covenant, what is it that it says? That we're to love God, love neighbor, we're to respect the dignity of every human being, right? Go back and read it. We're about to confirm some people. We made promises, and so we're bound to those promises, not just to take care of creation, but then also the people who are affected from it, okay? This green space could include space that some of these people can enjoy with families. I, as a single mom, I was always at the park, I was always hiking, and I think that's where Victoria's love for all this came. So the more we get out there, the more we expose, the more we love it, the more we want to do something about it. Green space can also help soak up floodwaters. Did you know that the majority of low-income neighborhoods are in flood zones? Because no one wants to live there, right? So the poor people, that's where they can afford. So putting green space can help soak up and do some natural drainage for some of these flood zones. Again, my daughter just spent a month studying sustainable cities in Europe. And that's what a lot of these cities are doing. You go to Freiburg, Germany, you go to Stockholm, you go to some of these cities, they're building, even in the street, these sort of green sort of drainages in the middle so that the stormwater could go and soak it in. They're thinking creatively about these things. You know, she went to, this was really amazing. I don't have a picture of it, but she went to a cemetery. Do you know how cemeteries here in the US look scary? Kind of creepy, right? Because you have the tombstones. She said, and she told me a picture. It looked like our meadows look like in the spring. Just flowers everywhere. They have benches for people to sit. And, you know, it's about what we create and how we create it. And it sort of changes how it feels. So these, she said, this is one of the most peaceful, I wanted to be in the cemetery, you know? So it's just, she was learning so much. And in many ways, some of our European counterparts, countries are way ahead of us on this. And yes, it's smaller, it's a smaller population, but these are things that are working that we can learn from and scale up. Trees provide cleaner air, can be habitats for pollinators, birds, and squirrels. We can reduce our lawns, folks. So much water is wasted with our lawns. And there's a plethora of solutions that could help if we all lived more intentionally, lived smarter, and of course, lived less selfishly. So I always tell people, one of the first things that you can do is learn what your carbon footprint is, okay? There are tons of calculators out there on the internet where you can, it asks you a bunch of questions. What food do you eat? Where do you live? What do you drive? How do you get around to work? All those sort of things. And it calculates what your carbon footprint is. And I have to say, even where living where I'm living with my solar, with my car, I still have a long way to go. Okay. And I live pretty intentionally. All right. And this is interesting data points here that the US has one of the largest carbon footprints in the world. Okay. We use up most of the energy. So here's a couple of data points. You say, oh, well, you know, it's most of these third world countries. Well, no. In the UK, for every one person here, it's three people, make up three people in the UK. In China, it's 1 to 2. In India, 1 to 8. In Nicaragua, 1 to 20. Malawi, 1 to 186. That's because only 6% of the population has any type of infrastructure, utility infrastructure. So I think what we do and how we do it is where it first starts. Adopting new habits, living intentionally, talking about it. And when we go to do something that we think is going to impact, really think about it, pros and cons. I was just talking to Michael Holder, who's the director of facilities here. And he was joking. He was like, well, what do I do? Do I use regular cups? It uses water. Do I use paper cups or plastic cups? Because there's deforestation. I'm like, well, that's where you sort of have to think through it. And what is the best choice, right? Is just thinking intentionally. How are we consuming things? What are we buying? Do we need to buy brand new? Can we go to a thrift store? My daughter's generation is the hugest thrifter. Every time I turn around, I say, what is that? She goes, oh, I got it for a dollar, you know? So thinking about how we can reduce consumption will reduce our carbon footprint overall. So here's the thing. So when we talk about making a change, a quarter of what we can personally do I mean, what we personally do only affects a quarter of the problem, all right? The rest of it, three quarters of it, is a matter of the system in which we live, okay? This system, of course, is made up of people, okay? And so what I wanted to do is talk to you about this poll that was done by the Yale Climate Communication Group, and it was done back in 2021. And they asked a few questions, okay? And it was done nationally. And so those results indicated a few things. So if you look at the first one, it says that 65% of people do believe global warming is happening. So we sort of shifted a little. Most people believe that. 70% do believe that it's causing damage to plants and animals. 71% thinks that it will affect people in the future. Now, this is where it changes, right? Do you think it will affect you? It drops to 47%, right? And the last one, do you ever talk about it? 35%. 35% of people don't talk about it. And so again, Catherine Hayhoe in her book and in her presentation, she talks about the answer to this, all right, is talking about it. So, you know, one, I find this all over, even in the Slack channel for my neighborhood, people are afraid to have conversations with other people. I think we need to be able to connect and talk to people about it. Find commonality. What are the things that we both care about and why, right? What can we sort of stand together on and move forward with that, right? So what she says is that conversation is going to be the key to changing things. We need to talk about why and how climate change matters to us and all the positive things we can do to make a difference. We need to start figuring out the things we can agree on. And so can we agree on these things, that we love God, right? Do you love the city you live in, Austin? I know I do. Can we agree that we love nature and we want it to be around for the future, for our children and our children's children? Who likes to garden? All right, there's a lot of hands, all right? Who likes to hike? There you go. Can we agree that green spaces and plants make cities and homes look better and cool things off and increase our well-being? These things that bind us is where we need to start. So we need to build on that kind of conversation. Can we agree that this record-breaking heat wave this summer was the pits? Yeah. All my plants are like thirsty, even the native ones. Can we agree that our lake and our water reservoir here in Texas is in drastic need of rain and water and conservation efforts? Absolutely. At the end of the day, I care. I care about this because I am a Christian. It's the lens through which I see everything. Caring of creation, caring of God, caring the people and the living things that are affected is an expression of our belief and our faith. And if you leave here today still saying, well, it's not real, or I just don't know if it's happening, regardless of that, let's put that all off to the side. Regardless if you really doubt it still, here's the gist of it. We were created with a purpose. We were created to care for God, people, and creation. So given that, it's our Christian responsibility and duty as a follower of Christ, why wouldn't you live intentionally, wanting to limit your waste and with as little impact to the natural world? Seriously, why wouldn't you? Ultimately, it's our responsibility and a true expression of our love for God. All right. Questions, comments, stories, things you want to share? Yes.
Yeah. First of all, thank you for the talk. And I really enjoyed how much you talked about your daughter. So I'm a millennial and I have a toddler. Friends are also millennials with little kids. And a lot of them, especially here in Austin, they're kind of at this, we do talk about it, but they're really out of, like, despair, slash apathy. Like, it's too hot. We're just going to move. And I feel guilty and bad about climate change, but I don't feel, you know, there's just that kind of like resignation. And so I was wondering, just like from a faith perspective, if you could talk a little bit about when we encounter that kind of despair in ourselves or that apathy, like how.
Yeah. So generally I say that like that apathy and that despair comes from loss of hope, right? So when there's no hope, when they can't think of, you know, what can I actively do to instill change? That's where some of that comes in, right? And so I would say, try to educate yourself about what are the real intentional things that you can do. Part of the Christian living is to live intentionally with everything we do, so that we think before we act. You know, what, I mean, even when you raise a kid, right? Like, you're very aware of your actions because they're soaking it all up. So it's being aware of your actions and how you live your life. So even if you took God out of the equation, just being a good parent, being a good friend, being good, a good neighbor to those around you, it's, you know, we're constantly reminding each other in our neighborhood on the Slack channel, yo, your sprinkler, it's like, you know, or there's runoff, you may have to look at stuff. So we're constantly, not that we're policing each other, it really comes from an avenue of really caring about limiting our waste. A lot of people have put rain barrels in and that kind of stuff, so they can use that. But there's a big push, really. So I think it's also surrounding yourself with people. And if you find one person, you know, that you can make a change on, then you can add another person. And that's the way it starts, right? It's just influencing one person and moving from that. But that's where I would take it from, you know, that really hope is a loss of this, you know, is because despair has taken over, and try to find those little things that do give people hope. There are beautiful things. Yes, it was hot as crazy this past summer, but finding things that you enjoy. Like, I would go out to the Lady Wildflower Center early in the morning, you know. I go for my walks out early in the morning, finding, you know, there's, you know, Barton Springs, and there's beautiful things still, even in the heat, that we could do. So just trying to inspire people that way. Hopefully I answered your question. Yes. Yeah, you can come up. Is it on? I think it is.
Just can't resist.
I don't know if it's on or not, but I just wanted to share quickly three things that I've learned that I've found to be helpful. So one is, if you are an Austin Energy customer, you can get your energy from wind. It's called like Green Choice or something, and you can just like let them know exactly where you want to get it from, and it's the same price. It might even, I don't know, I've never had it. It's always been very affordable. Also, I learned that in addition to like water issues with lawns, like a lot of the raking and leaf blowing and stuff removes habitat for insects. So if you can leave some of that stuff in place and, you know, maybe convince your neighbors that it's for the best, that's one small thing. And then also just like meat production is definitely a big contributor to climate, and you don't necessarily have to like become a vegetarian, but if you like can maybe forego meat for like one meal a week, or just like there's always like you can do less, you don't have to like completely convert.
Thank you. I mean, all those things, right? Like buying locally, you know, like going fresh produce market, where there's less waste, right? And my daughter, like, she lives in Davis, and they have a amazing food market on Wednesdays and Saturdays, and she gets all her produce for the week there. So the more you can do that, limiting, you know, how you get to places. This is the other thing that was really amazing. Someone put something on Facebook, and it was showed like the train and transportation in Europe versus us. I was just in Europe, and, you know, we got around everywhere on train. I didn't rent a car. It was amazing. I could go anywhere I wanted to all over Europe. You know, sort of designing cities and places we live smarter. And then also addresses a lot of equitable issues around transportation for those who live in lower income neighborhoods or who can't afford Austin and have to live out in Elgin. How do they get around, and they only have one car in the family, whatever, right? So there are ways and things that we can do, not just personally, but also like within the system, sort of just raising awareness. Yes.
Vote.
Your vote matters. I will say this little plug. Like, don't believe politicians. Like, you know, if they're using a topic and politicizing it, go educate yourself. Go educate yourself. Don't vote based on what they're saying. Go educate yourself and who's standing on the right side of the issue. Listen to the people who know. They've been studying this for 20, 30, 40, 50 years. There's a great podcast. I don't know if you've heard of this, but it's Allie Ward and it's called Ologies. Here's the thing, just be aware. She has a different scientist expert. You know, it could be someone who studies squirrels. It could be somebody who studies the ocean. But she does it in a fun and humorous way. And there's some bad words in it, but she's hilarious. And you end up leaving like really educated on different areas. And the neat thing about it is when she brings these people in, they're all talking about how whatever species or plant or thing that they're studying is being affected by climate change. I mean, they're all talking about it. So educate yourself on that. Go read Catherine Hayhoe's book, Saving Us. It's a great book. There's a lot of other resources you can read too. Go for hikes, go enjoy nature, go plant a garden, go grow your own food. There's so many things that we can use to connect to the earth and ultimately to each other. If you're not going to eat it, give it to your neighbor. We have that too in our neighborhood. We have community gardens, and whatever we don't eat, the community doesn't eat, we try to donate it to food pantries and stuff like that. You can make, even if it's little changes like that, it all starts to add up. Any other questions? You have?
So it seems like the science is there to deal with all this. And like the science exists.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The technology exists to resolve the situation. But so it's a human equation.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about this in terms of starting from commonalities and going from there. Can you talk a little bit more about, like, say, a small action? Let's get some green space in this neighborhood. Where do you start from in terms of do you let people who wouldn't necessarily agree with anything regarding climate change in on the fact that this helps mitigate that? Or do you really just, I guess, like, how do you get through those conversations, honestly?
Yeah.
Like, instead of sort of maybe tricking people along, maybe it's worth it.
So Catherine Hayhoe was, again, I really like her stuff because she comes at it being as a Christian, and how do you convince people who are deniers or whatever to sort of understand where you're coming from. And so her and I think it was Jimmy Kimmel were doing like a role play where she was at, you know, Cousin Ernie's, like, you know, he's wearing like a MAGA hat or whatever. And she basically said, he was like basically saying like, clean energy, all this kind of stuff, we don't need to do it. And then she came from the argument of it. Do you realize that China is beating us in terms of like clean energy and looking at other solutions and all this kind of stuff? He goes, oh, well, we can't let the Chinese beat us. You know, so it's about how you come at the argument and how you bring it up, right? So I think if you can find some commonality of like, okay, we can't let the Chinese beat us, whether that's true, you know, it's about, well, this green space, you know, it's about creating a space for families, creating a place for drainage. Like, I wouldn't come at it from the climate change, but what are all the other benefits that we can gain from it is one way. And then quite frankly, I mean, if they're Christian, come at it from the Christian standpoint. Are we caring for creation? Are we loving? Are we, regardless, like how I ended it, whether you believe it or not, it's still our duty. It's still our duty to make the right choices. It's still our duty to care for people. It's still our duty to care for the earth and create, you know, more sustainable and beautiful places for people to live in. So even if you take climate change out of it, we're responsible. I don't know. Hopefully that answered your question.
Got a couple of things from the Zoom folks. So,
sure.
Catherine Lee Dorr has been on Zoom, and so she has a couple of things to say. Just resources. She says the city of Austin is going to prioritize planting trees in low-income neighborhoods as part of the climate equity plan. So that's kind of in response to this conversation we were having about green spaces. But she also has put in the chat here several URLs that I'm not going to read out to you, but I would just say you could Google Austin Energy has rebates for you to help you save energy with your home. And also there are federal tax credits that you can get. So if you just sort of Google those, you should be able to get yourself to the appropriate website. Those are incentives, you know, for being more intentional about how we use energy in particular.
Yes, and I do drive an electric car too now. I got one last year. I did get the federal rebate for that and for my solar as well. So there are some perks. The last year that I actually got money back because of it. So like, yes. I mean, there's lots of things that we can do individually. And I will say driving electric car, it's not perfect. It's not a perfect solution. I do have anxiety when I have a long trip I have to do and I have to do some extra planning, but it's a choice I'm making to do because I'm trying to reduce my carbon footprint. And it's a nice drive. If you ever driven electric, it's a nice drive. My garage has never been cleaner. I don't get oil. I don't get gas dropping. You know, it's wonderful. So, it's not perfect. I'm not saying it's perfect, but again, it's trying to choose the best solution to a world that's constantly changing, and the challenges that we have. So, any other questions, comments, stories, anecdotes? Yes.
Well, it's maybe a long-time environmental student to grapple with, but nuclear energy is probably going to be a big part of the solution, and it's hard for people to deal with that sometimes.
Yeah. So here's the thing, like, yes, there's been nuclear issues, but actually, I mean, nuclear is actually a very clean source of energy. So as someone who studied this even back in the 80s, even with some of the risks, and we've come a long way from where we were even in the 80s and 70s to now in terms of how that's generated. But yeah, I mean, that could be another vehicle.
Yeah, I think we just maybe have to open up.
Yeah. All right. Happy to stay longer if people have questions or whatever, but I was like to begin and close with prayer. So here is another prayer. That's my daughter and me like forming a heart out in the Mammoth Lakes area. The earth is at the same time mother. She is mother of all that is natural, mother of all that is human. She is mother of all. For contained in her are the seeds of all. The earth of humankind contains all moistness, all verdancy, all germinating power. It is in so many ways fruitful. All creation comes from it, yet it forms not only the basic raw material for humankind, but also the substance of the incarnation of God's Son. So this comes from Hildegard of Bingen, who also lived a long time ago. So, so thank you. Appreciate you guys for here and hope you enjoyed it.
You can find more lectures and sermons on iTunes by searching for St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas, or visit our website at saintdave.org and click on the podcast button.